Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's August 3rd, 2012. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
And you can hear the bubbliness in my voice. We have some big news to talk about this week.
I don't know if it's that big of news. I mean,
Debbie
how
Downer.
Many times have we heard about, oh, they're going to be able to settle? I'm not going to believe it until I see something official.
You're Donnie Downer over there. Well, you know, even before we get to that today, I do have to share a little something with the Ante Up Nation. Now know what it's like to feel like Gundam in the Ante Up Nation. And for people who don't know who Gundam is, he's one of our listeners who has a real penchant for calculations, and when we discuss things with him, it tends to be one of those things where we just don't grasp what he's trying to tell us, even though he's telling us the same thing over and over again in as many different ways as he can. And then there are times where he doesn't understand us, and it's our fault too, and we go back and forth. But generally, Gundam is a guy that likes math, and he likes numbers, and sometimes he has trouble with us understanding what he wants to convey. And so my wife was looking at her laptop, reading something on Facebook, and she turns to me and she says, "Okay, I need some help with this. I just don't understand it." And I was like, "Okay, what is it?" Because I'm not on Facebook, you know, so I don't know what she's talking about. And I look over her shoulder, and my sister-in-law had posted this sort of riddle that she didn't understand. It was like a brain teaser type thing. And she didn't understand it either, so she put it out to the Facebook nation, or whatever you want to call it, and said, "Hey, help me figure this out. I don't understand it." So I look at the problem, and right away I understood it, and I got it. And I was like, "Oh, it's easy. It's this."
Huh? Obvious brag.
No, because it's not. It's just one way of looking at it. It just happened to understand what the person was saying and why they weren't getting it. So it was so frustrating, because then she like handed me the laptop and said, "Just say it's you on here and then explain the answer, because I still don't get it." And so, because everyone knows I'm not on Facebook, so I'm like, "Hey, it's not Jeannie, it's Chris, but she asked me to explain the answer to this thing." So I write the answer, and then like, I don't know, 20 minutes later, I still don't understand it, was what the responses were from the people on Facebook. So then my son-in-law, my stepson actually gets on there, and he's like, "You know, Chris has got it right. This is why, blah, blah, blah." And they're like, "No, I still don't get it." So then I'm like, "Look, think of it like this." And I'm writing it out. And as I'm writing, I'm thinking, and the post is getting longer and longer that I'm writing. And I'm thinking, "Oh my God, this is how Gundam must feel when we're sitting there going, I just don't understand." And he has to keep writing these longer and longer threads. And so for those of you who don't know what the riddle is the case of the $100 sweater. And it's an instance where you want to buy this $100 sweater or shirt, but you don't have any money. So you borrow $50 from your dad and $50 from your mom. Well, when you go to the cashier and you go to pay for it, it turns out it's only $97. So you give your dad a dollar, you give your mom a dollar, and you keep a dollar for yourself. Now, people were writing, "Well, now that you've given your dad a dollar and your mom a dollar, you only owe them $49 each. And now you have a dollar, so 49 and 49 are 98, and you have a dollar, that's 99, where'd the other dollar go?" And that just, people's heads exploded when they read that. They're like, "Oh my God, how can that be? Where'd the dollar go? I blame the politicians." And I mean, all of a sudden they're like getting in this Mitt Romney, Barack Obama thing, going back and forth. And I'm like, "People, It's not that difficult. It's not. And I don't know, do you want me to explain the answer here, or should I just leave everybody hanging and let them figure it out for themselves? I don't know.
We probably shouldn't punish our listeners.
Well, the problem is that people don't realize that the dollar you kept, you've still borrowed. It's mm-hmm. not your dollar.
Right.
So you don't owe them 49, you owe them 49.50 each.
Yep.
And so the dollar is the 50 cents, and then the original 97 is the sweater that you now own. And so, but no matter how many ways I wrote it, no matter how many times, and my son Charles too, and no matter how many times we both tried to explain it to them, they're just like, yep, I don't get it. I don't understand why. Where's that dollar? And I'm like, here's the dollar. You still borrowed it. That's not your dollar. Now you owe them 49. And so they couldn't figure it out, and it was so frustrating. And I have empathy now, which I didn't think I could experience when it came to math and Gundam, but I do. I have. So it was cool that I actually figured something out mathematically that I couldn't figure out pot odds on week 7 of our show or something. But I know how he feels now. Did you understand it right away?
I did, yes. Yeah. And you know what I also understand is this is why kids hate taking the SAT.
Yeah.
Because it's nothing but those things.
Yeah, exactly.
And it also illustrates the massive amounts of lost productivity in our nation. That there are people that sit around and try to figure out nonsensical stuff like this. Because here's the thing, all right? If you're at the store and they give you $3 back, why keep one?
Exactly. Why did you keep one?
It's a completely contrived situation. You give $1.50 back each, unless, you know, there's no such thing as quarters. That the woman said, oh, hey, no, sorry, I can't give you quarters and change. I'm all fresh out. Little pimply faced kid there just clean me out to go play Ms. Pac-Man. But other than that, it's a totally bogus situation, but somebody made it up, and, you know, you got to do that, or, you know, our parents won't have any emails to forward to all their friends.
I tell you, I blame Facebook.
At least they weren't playing Farmville.
That's true. And I did find it interesting that you used Miss Pac-Man as your game and not Pac-Man.
Oh,
very interesting.
Every Pac-Man aficionado knows that Miss Pac-Man is the gold standard of the Pac-Man family.
It got pretty gross for a while there. They were doing like Junior Pac-Man and Pac-Man yeah. meets Mario. All these games. It was just like, cut it out.
Pac-Man. Yeah, yeah.
Just
but no,
cut
Ms.
it out.
Pac-Man. And with the sped up speed too. You gotta have the super fast. You have the slow sluggish Miss Pac-Man now. I have no room for her in my life. But that fast one, absolutely.
Well, so anyway, my hat's off to Gundam for putting up with us. Because I know how you feel, buddy.
Well, you know, maybe we'll get Gundam in the big drop next year. And he can explain how he calculated his M to get up there and all that kind of stuff. He won't understand.
Is it called the big drop?
Big drop next
is it called the big? I thought it was the one drop, the big one
drop,
for one
yeah,
drop.
The big one.
The
drop.
Big drop.
The one.
The big drop sounds like something.
Soleil for water in Africa, or whatever they called it.
Big drop sounds like something Ryan Seacrest would host.
All right, so another one drop, and we don't know whether they're going to do another one next year. I think the scuttlebutt on the street is that they'll probably take a year off, so you know they don't totally bankrupt
yeah.
all the rich people in the world. But it was a great event, I think we all agree. And for some reason, I didn't catch this story when it first came out, which was a couple days before the actual event took place. Absolutely fantastic story in the Wall Street Journal that really kind of profiled this event and really how people came up with $1 million to enter this thing. And, you know, I think we talked about this in the show. The first time that they even announced this, we're like, where are people going to get $1 million to play this? And we knew there were going to be obviously these rich billionaires that, you know, $1 million falls out of their pocket at McDonald's. And that's not a big deal for them. But for professional players, this isn't an easy decision to make to enter this thing, right, with your own money. So,
right.
And we assumed everybody's going to get backers. But you're talking about it's one thing going around with your hand passed out for the $10,000 main event. But now, you got a Doyle Brunson size hat here to collect $1 million from your backers, right?
Yeah.
So it had a couple interesting things that came out of the story, and I'm sure you'll put the link on the recap on the forum so people can read it if they want. One was Barry Greenstein was quoted in there, And this was after they talked about Noah Schwartz gathering $900,000 from backers, blah, blah, blah. And he says, the poker world is different now. And here's his quote. He said, old school gamblers were their own loners, driving to poker games. Now there is this community of young players who grew up learning on the internet together, and they network and hedge with each other. It just feels different. All right, so he's not criticizing, I don't think. He's just saying, hey, back in my day, you, me, myself, and I.
Yeah.
You worried about number one, and let everybody else worry about themselves. And now there's this community now where folks are like, you know, hey, let's be buddies. I'll take a piece of you, take a piece of me, and then we'll make a little bit, hopefully. And that kind of helps in this scenario when there's a mentality when you go to your friends, I guess, and they're used to giving you money and taking a piece of your action versus somebody like a Barry Greenstein who has to go with, you know,
he's
arm outstretched.
Yeah, he's going so well. He's got to figure it out for himself.
Or even just going to someone and who, if you've never asked to be backed before, now you have to go ask. I mean,
yeah.
How do you even do that? I mean... So I thought that was kind of interesting. And then also, they had a couple comments from this gentleman named Al Wasserberger, and they described him as an entrepreneur, mergers and acquisitions advisor.
Hmm.
But he's the co-founder of this poker investment fund called Aerial Ventures. And they essentially just... this is like a... I don't want to say that other poker backing is not legitimate, because it is, but I mean, this is a much more formal way of backing players. It's essentially what it is. It's an investment fund. People invest money in there. There's a team that decides who to back, what tournaments to back, and then they return on investment back to the investors.
Is that very similar to the, wasn't that the Tony G thing, or was the Chip something, what was that called, where you could invest in people? And
yeah, I think this is probably a bigger offshoot.
A bigger offshoot, okay.
I think a little bit more formal probably than I think that was probably a little bit more small scale, but I don't know, it could be. But it's interesting that this is gone. We were talking about poker getting into the mainstream on the last couple of shows, right?
Yeah.
Here's a scenario where I wouldn't say mainstream necessarily, but it's more mainstream financial sector stuff now.
I can see it trading on the Dow index soon or something.
Oh, exactly. Absolutely. As long as you have a smart guy running and making the right bets, then it could be very profitable for folks.
So now, did this guy have anything to do with the one drop by any chance, or the people that he got behind?
Yeah, in fact, actually, he made a point of saying they absolutely would not have backed anybody in the one drop. It's just way too much money to put in one tournament. And... you know, they just need to spread it out. I mean, so again, they're showing kind of the intelligence behind the people running it, that that this isn't swing for the fences. This is a, you know, very well thought out.
Yeah. Positive EV.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Very interesting.
But yeah, there's a couple things that I thought were, and definitely I suggest folks go back and read the whole thing, because there's some interesting stuff about people, you know, gathering money. Phil Hellmuth and Farrakh Shahzad some of these other players too, and what they went through to kind of get money, and who came up short and who didn't. it's actually a good look behind the curtain at Wizard of Oz kind of story of this amazing event.
I'll be sure to post the link. And there's a prequel coming up to the movie Wizard of Oz. Did you know that? James Franco?
No, really?
Yeah, they're going to show how the Oz became the wizard or whatever, and he's playing the wizard or something. It's pretty interesting stuff. People are running out of Hollywood. They're running out of things to do, so they got to do prequels and sequels to everything now.
So does that mean the whole movie's going to be black and white? I'm not going to be able to go to color?
That's right. It should be. I'm waiting for the prequel to Rounders, actually, to be honest with you.
Yeah. I wonder if Franco has to eat his arm off in this movie. All right, once again, our hotline was quiet this week. Everybody's out, you know, the kids are out of school and stuff. People are going to theme parks and stuff. No one has time to call us anymore. But just a reminder, you can call us at 813-448-1120. And if we use your call on the air, we will send you something wonderful like a deck of J-Design playing cards, official playing cards of Anti-Up. You can pick up your own decks in the Anti-Up store at antiupstore.com.
But we did get a mailbag, and I'm very happy that we did. It comes from Roshan Lalwani, and he said, Me and my friends have been playing a lot of CNLHE in the dorms.
You're taking it international, buddy.
That's right, man. I wouldn't be surprised if you start seeing it on the Bravo, you know, the boards pretty soon. It's listed that way. But they're in the dorms, he said, because he's still in college. And he's been absolutely frustrated by the play. I've decided to take up the task of trying to teach my friends the basics of poker so that the game plays better. But here's the problem. I'm a terrible teacher, and that's not good to admit. you're in school, you're in college. Yeah, I know.
Well, you don't have to be a teacher.
That's true.
You can be a student.
Yeah. I'm a terrible teacher, and I can't figure out what to tell them to convince them that poker is not bingo and is more like chess. I hope you guys shed some light on this and help me out a little bit. Well, before we even do that, are you sure you want to teach these guys to be better? I mean, really, just maybe we should teach you how to learn to adjust to crappy play so you make more money so these guys don't get better. And
okay, yeah, but you know, it's not everybody likes to be frustrated when they play. They would rather give up some EV here to have a more enjoyable experience, right? And they're playing in the dorm, so
little knowledge could be dangerous.
It's a little different. College is a little different now than 40 years ago when we were in it. You know,
little knowledge can be dangerous.
Yeah, it's true. You know, this is a good question, and we usually get this with husbands trying to teach their wives.
Yeah.
You know, why they're not gambling, that they're investing or whatever it is. It's a tough thing. I mean, this is the thing that if you want to learn this, it's very easy to learn it. Right? If you go into it saying, all right, I really am fascinated by poker and how it's not gambling, and it's something better than that, explain it to me. That's easy to teach to. But these folks, I believe, and are in the same boat as the spouses that we talk about, they really don't care, I don't think, to know. So, you know, I think they kind of put up this guard where they're skeptical. And that makes it much harder, I think, doesn't it?
Well, the other thing, too, I think he might run into is something that I've run into in the past with my family. You know, when you play with your family and end up winning most of the time, and you want to help them, you want them to get better because you don't want them to get frustrated and not want to play or whatever. So you start to tell them things, like hints, and then they say, well, if I listen to you and I do what you say, then you know what I'm going to do, and then you'll be able to use that against me.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, when you tell somebody the fit or fold theory, where, you know, if your cards don't fit with the flop, you fold. If you tell that to your family, and then your family, when they check and you bet, they're going to be like, see, I knew that when I checked that my cards didn't fit and I was going to fold, so you just bet. So you might run into that situation with your friends if you're saying, hey, look, this is how you should play the game. Being students, they may say to you, oh, really? So what, you've been losing all along or not winning as much as you want, so now you're going to try to make us do what you want us to do? And so that also, I think, could be a stumbling block for you on the way to getting this play the game better scenario that you're hoping for. But really, if the guys are receptive, then things like that are really helpful, like the simple basics like fit or fold and the blackjack theory, where you really don't want to be starting hands that, in the beginning of your playing, you don't want to play hands that don't make good blackjack hands. So you'd want to play hands that total 21 or 20 or 19, things like that, and fit or fold. If the flop comes and your cards don't fit with that flop, then don't put any more money in the pot, you know, just fold if you face any kind of a bet. Those are the simple things that you get guys understanding the game quickly, and then from there you can always branch out, but just don't be surprised if you meet some resistance.
Well, yeah, and I think those are good suggestions, but here's kind of the problem, I think, the same way is there are people out there that tell you that you can beat roulette if you do this or that.
Yeah.
So when you're telling them, you know, use these starting hands, it doesn't really prove that the game is skilled and like it. You're just giving them an idea of how to play it better. But if they don't believe that the game can be played better, then, you know, you're talking to a wall, right?
of course, I think you're assuming they're assuming that. I don't know if that's the situation. He wants the game to play better and teach them the basics of poker. That's what he's asking. So I don't know if they're going to refuse what he's offering, you know?
That's true. That's true. I was thinking of the book. I think maybe one of the Harrington books where they actually took the same hand and played it differently through different people's point of view. So you showed how one person played it less skillfully than the other. I mean, it's kind of getting this whole duplicate poker idea. And there's another company out there that's doing the duplicate poker idea where, you know, everybody has a set deck and you're playing the same hands and cards at different tables. But, you know, if you win the table, then you played it better than somebody at the other table.
Yeah.
Right? And maybe if you deal it out like that way and kind of show the difference, ask someone show me how you would play this hand, and I'll show you how I play the hand, and cross your fingers that it actually works out for you.
Yeah.
But it should, you know. It, at least you're teaching them how they can harness the luck of the game into a skill. I think that's the key is, you know, hey, you know, I can... Well, you know, I play seven deuce. I can flop four sevens. Well, yeah, you can. It's unlikely. But that doesn't mean that there's no skill involved in it. The skill is involved in how you win with seven deuce when you don't flop four of a kind, right?
Yeah. And you're going to meet people who just won't hear anything you say. There was one gentleman at one of our poker one-on-ones that one guy bet all in, and another guy called, and the guy who called had like seven deuce and didn't have a hand. And I was like, "Why did you call? The cards were all dealt, and you had not even a pair." And he said, "I was bluffing." I said, "You were bluffing. You called the guys all in and didn't have a hand. That's not a bluff." And they just don't listen. So you're gonna face things like that too when you're trying to explain these. Just don't get too technical because you're gonna be wasting your breath.
That's true. All right. Well, once you show these folks how to play Crappy No Limit Hold'em, Roshan, then you can move on to the very exciting game of Chinese 13-card poker. Because we're going to send you a download of the Chinese 13-card poker app for Apple products from Smapsoft. And the rest of our listeners, you don't have to be a winner to enjoy this great app. You can download it yourself by visiting the iTunes store.
Okay, we got a call to floor. This comes from Nick in Charlotte. He says, I was playing in the World Series of Poker Tournament. The player in seat one bet from early position. It folded around to seat 6, who called, then folds the big blind. Seat 1 drops his cards next to the muck. Only the corners of his cards touch the muck, but he thought it had folded around to him. When told there was another player in the hand, he pulls back his cards. Seat 6 says those cards are mucked since they touch the muck. The floor is called over, and after hearing what happened, he asks seat 1 to whisper his cards to him. He does. The floor checks the two cards and says the player is still alive. When asked by seat 6 why, the floor said the cards were discernible and that they could still be played. Later, we had the same thing happen at our home game, and we looked up the TDA rule. Rule 48 accidentally killed/fouled hands. Players must protect their own hands at all times. If a dealer kills a hand by mistake or a hand is fouled, the player will have no redress and is not entitled to a refund of bets. If the player initiated a bet or raise and hasn't been called, the uncalled bet or raise will be returned to the player. Did the World Series 4 use TDA rule number 1 instead?
Yeah, of course, TDA rule number 1 gives floor the option of doing what's best for the game, even if it conflicts with another call. This is what Jody says. He says, "Dead hand, blown call." All caps. Totally screaming there. Blown call. I said, "I would not allow this if it happened to my table to the point of getting a penalty or thrown out of the tournament. I don't know the relationship between the dealer, the floor, and the player. In a major event with people playing for tons of money, this should never happen. This is an issue of protecting the integrity of the game. I'm sure the floor person was trying to do a good job and do right by seat one. What he didn't consider is he did wrong by the rest of the table, by the rest of the tournament players in that event, by Harris and the WSOP. What if seat one went on to win the event and it was discovered he was rooming with or related to the dealer at that table? What if they pulled the same move later in the tournament, switched cards in a more crucial pot, knowing this inexperienced floor person was near and would make the same call? At big events like the World Series of Poker, seemingly small things like this ruling can easily explode into controversial situations that are discussed for years to come. On a lighter note, this decision is jokingly called the whisper rule among seasoned poker managers and tournament directors. Anyone caught doing it is made fun of relentlessly." I gotta admit that it just smells wrong to whisper your cards to someone.
Yeah.
And I can get the idea. Again, I think Jody's point is spot on. It's the, you know, you got to consider your decision not just for this decision, but what it means overall. And, you know, no one was, I don't think anybody was doing anything nefarious here. The cards are sitting right there. They could figure them out. So the floor said, hey, if you could tell me what they are and they really are that, then great. I've actually seen this happen once, too. I think probably in a World Series circuit event that I played in. I could be wrong. It just doesn't smell right.
And the other thing, too, is I remember the World Series on television when the woman was, like, in the 10 seat. And she was all in with the Aces against J.C. Tran or one of those guys. And sure enough, the dealer marked her cards. And I can't remember what happened there. It was a long time ago. But still, they try to retrieve the cards. She says what she had. They go looking for them. And now I want to know what happened in this tournament if that was the person's last hand somehow. You know, if it was all in with that hand. Would they not have tried to find the guy's cards? He's just out of the tournament. How is that fair, too? So, very interesting. And it is odd that, I mean, I am totally for the, you have to go completely, you have to sell it one way or the other. And if you're going to say that cards touch the muck or mucked, then they're mucked. But it's just so odd that the absolute tip corner of the cards touches the muck, and now they're mucked when it's clear you can see what cards they are. You know what I mean? But at the same time, if you don't make that the rule, then all of a sudden you're going to have these varying layers of, okay, well, it's only an inch into the muck, it's only 2 inches into the muck, and then you're going to have these problems. So it has to be one or the other, and I guess 100% is the way to go with it. So if you're touching them at all, they're dead, and that's the rule. And I don't necessarily disagree with Jody, and I don't necessarily agree. I don't know what to think about this, because it's so weird that those cards were so... And besides, this person was folding anyway, wasn't he? Isn't that...
Well, no, he's folding because he thought he had won the hand. There wasn't any college.
Oh, he thought he had won the hand. Okay.
Yeah, and so, I mean, I think it's... I mean, obviously, Jody gave us a very detailed response. I'm not picking on him here, but I thought it was curious that he didn't mention this because he often does, much to the chagrin of our listeners. But, you know, again, seat one was in a position not to have this happen.
Right.
I mean, the dealer didn't even take his cards here. He mucked on his own by not following the action. And, you know, again, you got to be responsible for yourself, not just at the poker table, but in life. And, you know, sometimes bad things happen when you don't pay attention, and you have to pay the price for it.
You know, what a shame, though. I mean, it's especially in something like that, a big event like that, you know. But I definitely can't imagine making that ruling, you know, when, you know, the guy mucked. He mucked. He even folded his hand, right? He folded his hand. And just because he thought he had a winner and tried to grab it, that's not right. You fold it. You fold it, and you touch the muck. Your intention was still there, whether I touched the muck or not.
Weird. And, you know, this is tough, too. I can understand people feeling frustrated that, hey, we could figure out my cards, so let me have them. And I think it's just a reminder that rules aren't in there to protect the often mistakes. They're in there to present the big, really trouble thing, like collusion, and that's what Jody was getting at here. You know, sure, you could find your cards now, but how do you know that these people aren't working together? And if you have this rule where it has to be mucked and you can't do it, then that prevents that scenario from happening, even if it does hurt you in the short term. You know, I kind of got this with my Southwest luggage, and I'm like, you know, hey, you didn't. How come you're not reimbursing me for it? Well, you know, we have so many people that file false claims, so we have to. I'm like, well, that's not me.
That's right.
Why am I paying the price for those folks? But I, you know, I understand from their point of view that if you allow someone an inch, they take a mile, and that's exactly what this rule is trying to prevent. Is, you know, it's really there to protect you, even if you get caught in the tuna net.
And the rules are there to protect others, and that's what people forget too. They think that it's just about them, but it's also about the fair and, you know, fair side of everything, not just them, their own hand.
Absolutely. All right, Nick, we appreciate you sending it in, and you just recently got some swag, but we'll remind everyone else, send your call to floor questions to podcast@anteupmagazine.com. Wonderful, like a t-shirt from PMS Pokerware, which sells hilarious shirts for gals and guys in the Anteup store at anteupstore.com.
Hey, we're still looking for some ambassadors if you want to join the Anteup Magazine Nation. We got one needed in Central California, Deadwood, and the Seattle area. You can apply at anteupmagazine.com/ambassadors.
And don't forget to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Definitely like us on Facebook first so I can try to catch back up to Chris in our ongoing contest. But join us on the social networking if you can.
And, of course, don't forget, 2012, we have two cruises left this year. Go to anteupmagazine.com/cruise for all the details. Still time for August 27th out of Port Canaveral and November 10th out of Baltimore. Still have giveaways at Dover Downs, too, in Delaware, so be on the lookout for that.
And again, another reminder, definitely book that Baltimore cruise by Labor Day because there's probably not going to be a lot of availability after Labor Day. And we'll announce our four cruises for 2013 very soon.
Very soon. Very soon. Okay, Scott, what's going on outside of what we're going to talk about today on the Ante Up News Desk?
I'm actually surprised there's anything that could happen. All right, former world champion Greg Raymer was the winner of the 200th Heartland Poker Tour event held this week at Route 66 Casino in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
He also won an event at Route 66, so that's very interesting. No, but really, couldn't happen to a nicer guy. He was chip leader at the final table and just basically took it down, and what more could you ask for than have Greg Raymer win your event, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's great for the Heartland Poker Tour, I'm a big fan of Greg, too, so this is great. But, you know, part of me wonders, isn't it a little unfortunate when somebody that's had so much success in poker wins the really kind of this tour that really pinned itself as, you know, the tour for folks that don't have enough money to be on the bigger tours, right?
I don't know.
I mean, I'm not saying you shouldn't have won, you shouldn't be entered. Obviously, you should. I just, you know, part of me says, you know what? I wonder if there's some people out there a little upset that pros are winning their Heartland events. It's supposed to be Joe the Plumber from down the street, not Greg Raymer's.
Sounds like there's room for a tour that represents Joe the Plumber, then. All right, Horse Racing United, a nonprofit industry group that represents almost all of California's horse racing tracks, supports online poker legislation in that state and is working with Cantor Gaming for the site's technology.
Yeah, a lot of stuff going on in California now, but, you know, still all that infighting, so
yeah.
I don't know where it's going to go, but a lot of people are lining up to make it happen, so we'll see what happens. And finally, sad news report this week. 28-year-old poker professional Ryan Young was killed in an automobile accident. Several top names in the poker world immediately took to Twitter to mourn Young's death.
And every one of the tweets talked about how great the kid was. I didn't know him personally. I don't know if you followed on him at all. But, yeah, they all just talked about how great he was, how much fun he was at the table. Even Dan Negreanu played with him in the main event and said he was real thoughtful and entertaining and good kid. Real sad news. Okay, we have a new O'Malley's move this week, and it's going to be Pot Limit Omaha, so let's get to that.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I am Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we are seated at an 8-handed 2-4 PLO game. This is one of our weaker games, since it's high only, and we've gotten lucky to have built our stack to be the biggest at the table. But our opponents are, most of them, better at this game than we are, and we may be overextending ourselves a bit. The blinds post, under the gun folds, under the gun plus one calls, the MPs one and two fold, and we're in the cutoff with the 10 of hearts, 10 of clubs, 9 of clubs, 8 of hearts. We make the call with 870 behind. The button calls, small blind folds, and the big blind checks. The pot is $18, and we see a flop of the 10 of spades, 9 of hearts, 7 of spades. That's a flop that brings a rush of mixed emotions. Sure, we have top set, but there's already a straight out there, and there's a flush draw. The big blind checks, as does the under the gun plus one, and it's up to us. We've got to make the draws pay. We bet pot, $18. The button wastes no time in calling, but the other two players fold. The pot is at $54, and the turn is the Queen of Clubs. This card is pretty ugly. While not as bad as the Queen of Spades, there are still plenty of cards we would have rather seen than that. We figure we've still got the set and outs if that made our opponent's hand. We bet $30, and he min-raises us to $60. Okay, we weren't expecting that. This might be an insta-fold, but remember, it's our weakest game. We make the call. And with $174 in the pot, we're extremely perplexed when the Queen of Spades comes on the river. We've filled up, but it's an underfull. There's $174 in the pot, and we decide to lead out for $100. Once again, we get min-raised to $200. We have about $725 behind, with the pot at about $475. We could raise, thinking our underfull is good, fold if we're sure we're beat, or just call if we think we're beat and are trying to minimize our losses while still thinking there's a chance we're good. What do we do?
Okay, seriously, did something happen this week, Chris?
So much so that we had to tape our show 2 days early. Because we want, you know, whenever something like this happens, people want us to take to the airwaves immediately. And you and I always like to flesh things out a little before we jump on the ball. But we felt like if we waited too long, you know, we'd never hear the end of it. So we wanted to make sure we got it out there to people as soon as possible, which is why we're taping on a Wednesday instead of the Thursday or Friday taping. So, yeah, I would say it was pretty big news. Big enough.
Probably. All right, so here's the deal. Big news in the poker world this week, and it's news that some of us thought would never come. My hand's raised. Mea culpa here. I told you guys you're never going to get your money back. Yeah, I guess you don't have your money back yet, so I might still win. But I hope I don't. But players who had money on Full Tilt when that site shut down on Black Friday will soon be repaid after the U.S. government announced a deal with PokerStars that satisfies the government's complaint against both PokerStars and Full Tilt, allows PokerStars to acquire the assets of Full Tilt, and establishes a mechanism to have players owed money by Full Tilt to be repaid promptly. Separately, the government reached a deal with Absolute Poker to forfeit its assets to settle a similar case lodged against that site, bringing to a close the case against all online poker companies, though civil and criminal complaints against key personnel remain open. And as Chris mentioned, we started thinking, you know, as soon as this, we knew this, we had rumors that this was going to come out, right?
Right.
And I quit following rumors on this thing because you could War and Peace would be a pamphlet compared to the book of rumors throughout this whole thing. But when it happens, you know, we had a little conversation. You know, what can we do on the show this week, and who should we have on as guest? And you know, I think we came to the agreement that here's the thing: it's too early right now for anyone to offer more than some kind of superficial addition what has been announced. You know, some of the key things that we're looking for is how are people going to get paid back, and what is the new Full Tilt going to look like, and no one has those answers.
Right.
So, let's just spend today kind of talking about what we do know, and putting out some theories about what the future may hold, and then obviously when we get something more definitive, we'll have somebody from PokerStars or elsewhere come on the show and actually fill us in on those plans. But for right now, we'll just tell people what happened and what we think of it, right?
Right, exactly. And the first thing is that Full Tilt agreed to forfeit all of its assets to the U.S. government to satisfy the charges against the company. So that's got the ball rolling here.
PokerStars also agreed to use $184 million to pay back non-U.S. players on Full Tilt within 90 days. They're also forfeiting $547 million to the U.S. government to satisfy charges against it. And the U.S. government will keep some of that $547 million to offset its cost involved in the case. But the rest of it will be used to repay U.S. players owed money on Full Tilt.
Because of that, though, now PokerStars will acquire the assets of Full, pretty much most of the assets, right? It wasn't all of the assets from Full Tilt, is that
right?
Yeah,
the good assets.
The good assets of Full Tilt from the U.S. government once the government receives a $225 million payment from Stars, which needs to be paid within 6 days of Tuesday's agreement. Stars says it plans to operate Full Tilt as a separate site once a new management team can be assembled with new and stronger regulatory oversight.
PokerStars founder Isa Scheinberg must vacate any management or director role at Stars within 45 days, and PokerStars may not hire any of the Full Tilt executives who face civil or criminal charges in connection with the cases.
They also may not offer online poker in the United States until it's legal to do so, but will be permitted to enter the market without prejudice at that time. And now, before we just keep listing things, that was interesting to me, because I wanted to put something funny on Twitter yesterday saying, okay, PokerStars may not offer online poker in the United States until it's legal to do so, but last I checked, online poker is not illegal. I really wanted to put this, you can only do so much with 140 characters, and you know. That's why you like Facebook. Yeah.
None of the indicted companies admits any wrongdoing, and of the 11 individuals who have faced charges in the cases against the three online poker giants, one has been sentenced, five have pleaded guilty and are awaiting sentencing, one is in custody, and four remain at large internationally.
And then finally, John Pappas of the Poker Players Alliance says the grassroots organization is working to make sure the payouts to U.S. players happen as quickly and with as little burden as possible.
Whew, boy. You would think it'd be really quickly to get through what happened.
Yeah.
That's a lot of stuff.
That's a lot of stuff, and basically 24 hours since we found out about it, too. It's pretty crazy.
Okay, so here's a couple things that that we put down here to talk about. The first thing I noticed, it's probably some of our listeners really don't care about this, but journalism nerd alert here. The two press releases took wildly different approaches to announcing this news.
Right.
The Department of Justice put out a press release, and then PokerStars put out a press release. And the Department of Justice was heralding this PokerStars acquisition as a settlement of this egregious case, and PokerStars was announcing it as a purchase of Full Tilt. And, you know, I think the immediate Twitter and everything was, hey, PokerStars buys Full Tilt, which technically is correct.
Right.
But the government's not looking at it that way. The government's looking at it as you're paying a fine, and because of it, we're going to give you a Full Tilt here so you can take care of the people that were hurt.
I did find it interesting that, you know, the government, within their wording, was calling the people victims, and they were victims. But when they started out with this Black Friday thing, they were the reason why these people were victims. I mean, I'm not saying that Full Tilt would not have figured out a way to pay everybody their money, but if they didn't do anything, PokerStars would have just kept on going and doing everything properly, and there would have been a problem. You know, and it's just weird that they made them victims, essentially, and then said, we're going to get the money back to the victims, you know. It was kind of weird. I mean, I understand. They are victims, because obviously I don't think there was a way for Full Tilt to get out of this mess, and whether there was or wasn't a way, I don't really care. It doesn't matter. Everything's hopefully going to be rectified now. But it's just weird that they were the reason that people were without this money, and then they're like, now they're like, oh, pat ourselves on the back because we found a way for them to get their money back.
Yeah, it's very similar, and I know I mentioned this on the show before too, but one of the early Simpsons episodes that I think was classic was when I think it was Sideshow Bob, but was a politician released him from jail, and Sideshow Bob ran against the politician criticizing him for being light on crime because he let this criminal out of jail.
Yeah.
It's exactly the same thing you're talking about. You're right. You know, there were no victims until the government created victims. Now, you know, obviously I know they thought they were doing right by this other stuff, but yeah, they clearly created the victims in this case. But at least they're taking warning that they care of them now, so.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty funny. And you were right, though. I mean, I know you mentioned it before, but you're right about the way they approached the writing of this. And I read the whole Department of Justice thing, too, and they're like, it's funny, it's like, because of this agreement, all of the parties involved, none of them admit to doing anything wrong. But here's why we think they're wrong.
Right.
Have you noticed that? And then you're reading the whole release, and the release is like for instance, PokerStars created a company that sold golf balls to people when there were no golf balls being sold. It was just handling the money. And we're like, we don't need you to explain this. Just say that they said they didn't do anything wrong, and we said they did, but, you know, we're letting them off with a fine. I mean, oh my God, they wouldn't let it go, you know? It was hilarious. It's pretty funny to read. You got to read it.
Yeah, yeah, and I hope you put the links to both of them on the forum so people can read them, but, because you're right, the other thing was the PokerStars admitted no wrongdoing was really high up in the PokerStars press release. And then you're right, it was like kind of this throwaway line. And the Department of Justice was followed by all the things that they did too wrong. And, you know, it's just that, you know, those this negotiation, you can tell why it's taken so long to get to this point. Because probably stuff like that.
Oh, sure.
Hey, we're going to do this as long as you put in there that we did nothing wrong. All right, fine. That's what you want us to put in there. But we're still going to tell people what you did. But, you know, I think the biggest thing come out of this and is that everyone, except the individuals involved, and I'm talking about the executives that are still facing charges, really seem to come out as winners in this, didn't they? You got the Justice Department.
Yeah.
They get the claim victory. And they made some money, obviously, off of this thing. PokerStars gets a rival, probably on the cheap, by the way. Mm. And it's allowed to re-enter the U.S. market. Players will hopefully here very soon get their money back. Obviously, I mean, it kind of sucks that it's taken this long. But you know, I think one of the lawyers for Full Tilt actually said, you know, hey, this is a dream scenario for the resolution of this. I mean, obviously, you wish it never happened, but if you had to resolve it, this is the best way to go to make as many people happy as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. I wondered if I wonder what the hierarchy is going to be for the paybacks too. Are they going to say, oh, "Okay, well, Blair Hinkle deserves gets a million because he, you know, what I mean, he owed a million, so he has the most online or something like that," or are they just going to do it randomly, alphabetically? I mean, how are they going to do it? And the reason why I ask is because you said it yourself, the DOJ is getting money from this money.
Yeah.
So that money that would have been used to pay back everyone in full is now going to the DOJ, so some people aren't going to get money. Is everyone going to get money, but you're only going to get a percentage?
My understanding is that it's less than $200 million that's owed to the U.S. players, and what PokerStars is forfeiting to the government's $540 million. So theoretically, there should be enough money to pay everybody back. And we'll get into this in the next talking point. But and then plenty left for the government to line its pockets on it too. So I don't think that's going to be the question. But I think the real question, and this is what I was telling people, I mean, obviously we're celebrating now and we should, but I don't think people should go crazy right now until you see how complicated these paybacks in the U.S. are going to be. Obviously, the foreign players is going to be easy because we've seen PokerStars do that quickly. They're going to pay those players directly, and they said they're going to do that within 90 days, and there's no limits on the amounts or anything, so you're just going to go in there and claim your money, and PokerStars is going to send it to you. And we saw quickly they did that after Black Friday here in the U.S.
Right.
It's the U.S. players, because PokerStars, while they're fronting the money to pay them back, has nothing to do with paying people back. This is going to be the Department of Justice, and there's going to be some kind of process where people are going to have to, I imagine, apply for a payback or something like that. We don't know how long it's going to take. We don't know how burdensome it's going to be. I mean, that's what the key point of PAPS's press release is. Hey, we're working with the government to make sure that it's quick and painless, even though we don't think it might be. We really don't know. I mean, this is one of the things this is one of the two big issues that I think people really want to know, and no one knows it right now. So
you
know, we spent forever trying to guesstimate about it, but it's probably not going to help too much. But we did get a caller this morning from one of our listeners, and with an interesting point of view. So let's listen to that.
Hey, Annie up. I'm excited about all this great news about the DOJ jumping in, getting us our money back with the PokerStars deal. What is it going to mean as far as getting our money back with going through the DOJ? Now, if you just have money on there that you played with, never really kept track whether you're winning or losing, but most likely breaking even, are you now going to have to pay taxes on money that, you know, you're just trying to get back that you put online? Like, seriously, how is this going to work out for the average guy who's just mediocre, getting by, and they have our money? Any explanation would be great. I appreciate it, guys. Thanks.
Do you think that amnesty is a probability here? Because is there really any way to prove if you just deposited $500 and that's all you did with it and you never actually got a chance to get it back? why would you pay taxes on your own money? That it's your own money, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I want to be careful here and reminding folks that I am not a tax advisor. I'm not an attorney. Right. I'm not anything like that. But I think there's some common sense things here. One, there will be a government record of giving you money from the settlement.
Right.
And I'm not suggesting that the IRS is going to be talking to the Department of Justice, but common sense is that the government knows they paid you $12 or $1.2 million or whatever it is that you're owed. So there is a paper trail. And I know, I probably don't want to say most Americans, but it's probably true. Don't report every dollar they've earned. You know,
yeah.
You have a garage sale and you make $100. How many people actually put that on their income tax, even though you should? And online money, even though the government considers it an illegal entity, you're still required to, declare that income on your taxes. So where it gets a little tricky here is if I put $5,000 online and lost $4,000 of it, and now I'm getting a $1,000 check back. I think that's what our caller's saying, is am I paying taxes on essentially loss? And I would guess, just from my understanding of the tax code, is that you would claim losses, the $4,000 as losses, and that will supersede the $1,000 in quote-unquote gains. So I don't think anybody's really going to get screwed. That's just my guess. But you're certainly going to want to talk to your tax advisor and figure out what's going on here. And then the other thing is, I don't want to make it sound like, hey, just be happy you got anything. But, you know, be happy you got something.
Yeah.
A year ago, did anybody think that you were going to get this anything back? 6 months ago, did you think you were getting anything back? So, you know, if you get a good chunk of it back and you end up having to go through some pain and pay some tax on it, you know, at least be happy that that you have what you have, I guess.
Yeah, and I don't think anyone, I mean, if the worst case scenario is that they're going to give you the money that you had in your account, but now you have to pay taxes on whatever that disbursement is. That's the worst case scenario, because, I mean, unless you just don't get money because you can't prove that your account was account or something like that. But I mean, generally, you have an account, they recognize you have an account, and you're going to get money back. The worst thing is that you'll have to pay taxes on whatever you get. But I have a feeling, I mean, again, I don't know. I have no idea either. I'm no tax expert. But I just have a feeling that they're just going to be like, okay, this is the money you had in your account. We're going to trust that you paid your taxes on this if you earned it. That might happen because, you know, they expect every American to pay their taxes the way they're supposed to. So they're going to say, hey, you had $5,000 in this account. Here's the $5,000. Now, if it was income, then you should have paid taxes on this in the last calendar year. If it was a loss, you should have, you know, whatever your scenario is, they expect you to uphold your scenario. That could happen too. I don't know if it will. A lot of people are greedy, but that's the best case scenario.
Right? And I think we got to remember too. I mean, the government has all these records now, right?
Yeah.
They have. I don't know what the arrangement is with PokerStars, whether they're turning everything over to them now. I would be shocked if that's the case, if they didn't keep access to stuff so they know the transactions that came in and came out, right? So I guess that's what I'm saying is I would be a little concerned if my tax advisor suggested an aggressive approach to this. I would be as conservative as possible on this.
Yeah.
If there is that case, and again, we're getting ahead of ourselves. I imagine once the whole process is announced, then this will be addressed in it, I would think. So, but interesting to pontificate on it now. But I think the other big thing that people are really interested in is what a PokerStars run Full Tilt site is going to be like. Now, they did say that there were certain markets that they weren't going to introduce it in, some countries in Europe. But they did make it clear that they want to bring it back to the United States. So what I'm curious about is, what do you do with this product? Do you do something different with it to really set it apart? Will be players be playing on both sides, you know, kind of like those skins, in which case it doesn't really matter too much. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, one, I'd like to know if they're going to change the name. To me, that name is just so tainted now. And, I mean, I realize that there was a brand or whatever, but, you know, yeah, and everyone's going to be made whole again, essentially, so maybe that helps. But to me, I if I don't follow the news as well, or if I'm just, there are a lot of people out there who just, when they pick up our magazine and they read this, it's going to be the first time they learn of it. Believe it or not, there are people out there like that. They're just in their own little thing. So for me, if they're not picking up our magazine and they're just going on the internet and they see, oh, Full Tilt is back, they're going to be like, I'm not going on there. Those guys stole, you know what I mean? So it's going to be this huge, you know, spinning public relations thing if you kept the name. To me, that, I don't know. I don't know if I would keep the name. But what will the site be like? To me, I would never run a site that's identical to my other site.
Right.
I would totally make it something that, you know, I would do research and I would say, okay, what's great about our site? Which, PokerStars, we loved everything about your site. I mean, I have to admit. But there may be things that people don't like about it. Like, you know, PokerStars offered, to me, I thought it was their micro limits were better than Full Tilt's micro limits. So maybe Full Tilt becomes the site of higher limits, or so I don't know what it is, but to me, I would want that site to be different, because you remember, Scott, do you remember when we first started the magazine, you and I went to a local, it was like a local meeting for small business, people who want to start small business, remember that down in St. Pete?
Yeah.
And the guy said to us, one of the smartest things you can do is to own two stores of the same product, but have one down the street from the other with a different name.
Yeah.
And he said, because what will happen is they'll go to your store, and if they don't like what they see, or if you tick them off for some reason, they'll say to you, I'm going to go to the store down the street. And it reminds me of a Seinfeld episode, too, when Elaine went to some Mexican store for Mexican clothing or whatever, and then she got mad. So I'm going to go to the one down the street and buy up everything. And she goes down there, and the woman owns that store, too. And so, to me, I keep saying to me, I don't know why, for me, I would make Full Tilt a little different. So you're capturing every possible scenario of player to me.
Exactly.
So,
yeah, and I'd be really shocked if they didn't go that route. You know, I was thinking this a lot about this last night, about, you know, your first point about the Full Tilt name being tarnished. And I've done a number of interviews over the last year or so where I said the same thing, and I couldn't imagine anybody wanting to bring back that name. Tainted as much as it is, but I do think that it's completely, if anybody can bring the Full Tilt name back and not have it be a disaster, I think it's PokerStars, because, you know, people are going to, here's the thing, you go back to the group, Bernard Tapie, who, you know, was trying to buy this site for forever. You know, that's a company that has no experience in running an online poker room, right?
Right.
And also had their own kind of problems before, so it doesn't really instill any new confidence in this tainted site. But a PokerStars, I mean, world over, people respect PokerStars for how they ran their site before Black Friday, definitely how they handled it after Black Friday. And I would think an intelligent player, and that's different than the players that you're talking about that aren't informed and just see Full Tilt and remember it, right?
You're right.
But educated players like us will know that PokerStars is running it now, that it's being regulated in the Isle of Man now, so it's going to have stricter thing, money's going to be segregated like it should. At that point, then it just becomes a choice over which software, which features that I prefer. And I never thought I would hear myself say this, but I don't think I'd have a problem playing on Full Tilt now.
Well, I definitely wouldn't have a problem with it. And I guess the underlying theme for me is the fact that when they do get to come back into the United States and offer this, because eventually this is going to happen, I just wonder how many people will be thumbing through magazines or websites looking for codes to sign up for a website and see Full Tilt on one and PokerStars on the other, and in the back of their mind, that full tilt is just going to be blaring in their face saying, oh, my God. And, I mean, I totally would play on it if PokerStars ran it because I'm devoted to PokerStars. And I know the product and the professionalism that they handled this with. So I wouldn't have a problem with it. It's just I think that they're going to want a new whole – and that's the whole point of bringing it back is that we think there's going to be this second sort of boom again when you can get all the casual poker players from the Zyngas and all that stuff to play on your site. And I just think that there's such a stigma attached to this full tilt that no matter how reputable PokerStars was, those people may not even know that, you know, and – but I wouldn't have a problem playing on it if I knew Stars was running it. And so our market will be captured, but I don't think the other market will.
Well, again, you get back to your very good point from our business class was that, you know, I don't want to say there's not a concern, but there's really a little concern if you're running both of the two biggest sites. It doesn't really matter so much to you where people play as long as they're playing on one of your two sites,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, and as long as you get enough players on the one to make it work. So, I think the other interesting thing, too, is, you know, the PokerStars made it very clear and high in their press release that it was very important to them to be assured that they will be able to re-enter the U.S. market without prejudice. And I'm sure they're excited about that, and they should be. But just because the federal government's not saying, hey, you can't come back in, doesn't mean that they will be able to come back in. Particularly if this regulation continues to be on an intrastate level rather than an interstate.
Right.
Every state makes up their own requirements on who can get licensed and who can't. So, I mean, this is not a get-out-of-jail-free card for PokerStars. They still would have to go through the state licensing, and some states may say, you know what, I don't care what your settlement with the federal government is. We didn't like that you were selling golf balls and calling them poker tournaments. And we're not going to license you in our state.
And that's true. But the other side of that coin I have to ask is, now that Delaware has approved it and the governor signed it and everything, does this mean that PokerStars now could go to Delaware and pitch their case for a license and start
absolutely.
Spread poker?
Yeah. I would think Stars would very soon try to get licensed in Nevada, too, and we'll find out.
Yeah.
Whether they can or not. So, I mean, certainly they're going to try. What I'm saying is that...
Oh, I know what you're saying. I'm just asking, though. Is that possible? That's possible then, right? They can do it to the state. Okay.
You know, and I think what some of the experts were saying, too, is the smart thing for Stars to do now is to team up with a real strong brick-and-mortar company, which gives them a little bit more legitimacy. Certainly, you know, a big company, and, you know, I don't know what name I'd throw out there, but... would be smart to partner with them in terms of just their knowledge of how to run a successful offline site.
Right.
You know, if they know they can get it through the licensing, why would you not want to partner up with the PokerStars? You know.
And of course, if you remember, a week before Black Friday, they had partnered with the Wynn.
Yeah.
And then that obviously dissolved. But I wonder if that's just that will resurrect again and get them the ball rolling out there. And like you said, they know how to run a successful site. They're the largest site in the world. And they had so much money, and they've done it so well that they could afford to buy Full Tilt and pay their fine and still have an incredibly soluble business that will only continue to grow now. So clearly that's somebody you'd want to align yourself with. And I'm sure that they're thinking that, too. I'm sure the brick-and-mortar is just saying, okay, who's going to be the first one to get hooked up with Stars? Because once this thing gets going, you'd love to have them in your corner making your money for you.
Absolutely. Let's talk about some people now. I mean, Iza is no longer in any kind of official capacity with Stars within 45 days, according to this. But is that mere window dressing? I mean, his son is the CEO and chairman of the board. I mean, they're looking for a new CEO, but obviously his son is still very active in the company. I mean, it's not like you're going to go over for a Christmas dinner. Or actually, that's probably wrong there. you're not going to go over for dinner some night and have dad ask you how the site's going.
Yeah.
Or the son ask dad, hey, you know, I'm thinking about doing this. So I almost think it was more kind of a little grandstanding on the government's point of view just to say, hey, this guy's not involved anymore. But, I mean, it's almost like the mob guy getting doing the 20 to life. But still running the family from behind bars, you know?
Yeah.
That doesn't seem like it makes a big deal to me.
Well, you know, how far do you take it then? You know what I mean? Do you say, okay, now you can't have anybody related to those people? I mean, at what point do you stop demanding?
Exactly. Yeah. Obviously they reached an agreement and they didn't mention anything about the son. So, you know, that's what I'm saying. I think it might have been just kind of a chest thumping.
Yeah, wait for them to just say, hey, we can get this guy to step down. And
no, obviously he's one of the four folks that are still remain at large. I mean, this doesn't do anything to the civil and criminal case against him in the U.S., and he's still considered a fugitive. Obviously, he's not going to be vacationing in Miami anytime soon, I wouldn't think.
Right.
So maybe it's not a big deal, but kind of interesting. And then, you know, what's next for folks like Howard Lederer, Ray First, Chris Ferguson? I mean, Chris Ferguson's lawyer put out a real not saying anything press release right after this. You know, they're still working on their settlements with these, and I assume it's the same with Howard and Ray from those. But there's going to be a next wave of discussion on this is going to be when those folks settle and we are actually able to talk. I think for me at this point now, that's what's going to be most interesting to me. I really want to hear from Howard Lederer and Chris Ferguson.
Yeah.
I really want to hear from them. I just want to, you know, I'm not going to say I agree with them or disagree with them or hate them or like them. I just want to hear from them. Yeah. And I know, legally speaking, that they're smart not to have said anything up until now. So hopefully they'll have some kind of settlement coming through. But, you know, once that comes out, because the next thing I'm waiting for, you know, I just watched rewatched this great movie, Too Big to Fail, one of his HBO movies based on the financial meltdown. Phenomenal job they did with it. And, I just can't wait for a Black Friday movie to come out. I mean, not a fictionalized one, but, you know, one that's, you know, based on a true story.
Yeah.
And I want to see the behind-the-scenes stuff that's gone on with this. And I think that's going to make for some real good cinema.
And, you know, that's the other thing, too, is that they can't possibly take credit for any of this. You know what I mean? They can't, as far as the settlement and stuff. They
need to just... Ray Bittar did.
I know. That's what I mean. Look what happened. You just can't do that. I don't know. I mean, do you think we'll ever see these guys playing poker again, ever?
Oh, I would. I mean, forever is a long time. I do think we'll see them play again. I don't imagine that they'll ever enjoy the game again, at least live.
Yeah.
We saw this down here in Florida. You know, Russ Hamilton, I don't know if he still plays, but he plays at a room down in South Florida. And, he gets ridiculed and, you know, he faces constant hatred at the table. And eventually, I got to think that the game's no more fun for you at that point. If you know when you go to the poker room, you're going to have people just in your face. So, I would think they'd still play. Maybe I'm wrong, but...
And you know,
it's
too,
be enjoyable
for these people to play online now, you know, and then the other thing too is like, okay, they want to play on the anonymity of online, calling yourself whatever you want to call yourself online. But if it's regulated in the United States, then those records will probably be accessible at some point. If you wanted to, if you had some crack journalists who wanted trying to find out if Howard Lederer and Ray First and Chris Ferguson are playing online secretly, someone's going to want to. Someone like that. I can just imagine somebody in the 2+2 forum trying to crack that and getting deep into the records, finding out who it is, and then just punishing them relentlessly in the chat.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just, they're going to have nowhere to hide. They really aren't going to. Eventually, they're not going to have anywhere to hide except, you know, just to give up the game altogether.
Now, I know you and I talked about this a little bit yesterday. You know, are we ready for a new mini boom now? Because, you know, a little about $200 million is going to be, actually, if you count the foreign money, almost less than $400 million is going to be put back into the poker economy here relatively soon. That's a big chunk of change, right?
Yeah.
What is this going to mean for the World Series next year?
Yeah, I wondered that too. I felt like it would totally bump the numbers because if people didn't have the money to travel from Europe, well, now there's no question PokerStars is a legitimate company over there. Full Tilt's going to be launched there probably within 90 days of this, and they're going to bring Full Tilt back. That was one of the things I read. So they're all going to get their money back over there. That means that they're going to have money to play and money to come and even money to enter satellites over there. to get their seats and then come over here. I mean, I think for sure the numbers in World Series, I think this makes a lot of people happy in Las Vegas. And I think instantly the numbers will go up. I mean, not instantly, but I mean, it offers a chance for it to instantly go up. I think next year's World Series will be bigger than this year. No matter, even if you don't regulate poker still within the next calendar year, I still think they're going to go up. That's a lot of money to get back. And now all of a sudden they're going to be flush with this cash. They're going to be like, oh my God, I can start entering events again. I can start playing cash games the way I want to again. I can start giving money to my friends to play, you know, and back them. And I think that it absolutely does 100% help Vegas and the World Series next year.
Well, I think it helps the entire poker economy.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, once we figure out how long it's going to take for Americans to get their money back, I mean, I think you're going to start seeing, you know, much bigger fields in your local tournaments.
Absolutely.
Tournament series as soon as that money starts getting back in the economy, because you know not all of it's going to go straight back into poker. You know, people are going to use it for things that they need to use it for, but it certainly emboldens a poker player to play more now that they have it. You know,
absolutely.
You come home one day and you got a check for $5,000 in the mail that you weren't expecting. You know, sure, you may pay off the credit cards and take a vacation, but you're going to go to the poker room.
Yeah.
And plop that in there. So definitely a good thing. And then I guess the final question is, does the settlement help or hurt our struggling movement for federal regulation and or our state efforts for online poker?
I mean, a little bit of me feels like Reed and Kyle and those guys told the DOJ, okay, let's get this done. And there they are on the phone now. They're agreeing with you. That's.
Hey, Scott, I just want to go over the legislation with you.
That's Reed right there calling and saying, hey.
Got to get something done for the lame duck session here.
But, I mean, obviously I don't know how it works. I don't know what the government does. I don't know if they have real interaction or not. But when you keep reading item after item every day that there's one more thing happening, one more thing happening, one more thing happening, and then all of a sudden, boom, they want to settle all of these things in one day. Even the ultimate bet absolute thing, they want to get that done. The same. Why all of a sudden, when there's talk of lame duck and elections, and why all of a sudden did they just, boom, settle everything at once? It was remarkable. It wasn't just one case. Because remember, I mean, I realize that I guess that they were all on Black Friday, so that's probably, but still, it's just so weird that they settled it all in one day. And to me, is that possible? Is it possible that these senators, you know, are that close to saying, look, we got to get this online thing done, but we can't have this black guy hovering over it. We got to get it taken care of. And when that black eye is healed, then we can proceed with getting this passed. And I don't know if that's possible or not, and I'm probably just naive, but to me, it felt like there was a push somehow to get it all done. And not just by the DOJ.
You could be right. You know, obviously, I think the DOJ was trying to get it resolved as quickly as possible without any pressure either, just because, you know, hey, you want to move on to the next cash cow, you know? So, it was interesting that everything was settled essentially on the same day. Though, I guess you could also make the case that, you know, sometimes, you know, you're setting up pieces, and then once the one piece comes into place, everything else falls right behind it. I mean, I think obviously if there wasn't a situation, I mean, I would say if Full Tilt had been managed like PokerStars, then I don't think this would have taken as long to settle. But it just became complicated because they needed to come up with a way to get players their money back, and that was through Stars. So everybody essentially did the same thing. They just gave their company to the government. They just needed to work out this thing with the Stars to give, you know, have them not give their company up, but give enough up to replicate it. So, I mean, there is a case to be made that, you know, once they reached the Stars Full Tilt deal, then you just went to Absolute and said, all right, here's the deal. Just give us everything.
Yeah.
But, but I don't think it can hurt. I guess that's what I was thinking last night. I mean, I don't think this can hurt, because now you've got this resolved. You've essentially punished people. You've essentially shown that, hey, the U.S. Isn't going to tolerate rogue things going on, though there's still plenty of sites out there that seem to be escaping the radar. now makes it easier to sell it to congressmen and congresswomen, when you can say, hey, we cleaned up all the bad apples, we got the spoiled apples back the way they should be, now let's do the thing the right way.
Yeah, I definitely can't see it hurting. I mean, I don't see how it could hurt. I don't know any way this could have hurt. And I do, like I said, I think that the federal government, like you said, the DOJ wants to move on to its next cash cow. Well, the same thing with the federal government. I mean, they don't want to see these fractioned, you know, off states making money on this stuff and them not getting a penny. They just don't. They want to see federal regulation. They want to do what's to make us whole. And they know it's inevitable that states are going to pass it without you. Now it's happening. I mean, it's actually happened now. And they don't want that. They want to control the entire country. They don't want have little pieces running off and doing what they want to do. And so, for a way, I think that it would have been much more. It's much more difficult to get this stuff passed, knowing that there are fugitives and unresolved cases and almost $1 billion out there for the taking and not being taken and rectified. And so now that all this stuff has been taken care of, you can go to these people who are on the fence and say, you know, hey, we've done it. We've taken care of it. We showed that we can take care of it. Let's move forward and put something in place that'll protect the American people and whatever, and get this going, get this money coming in.
Well, excellent discussion, and obviously a big week for news, and we'll continue to stay on it. And like I said, once we as some more concrete stuff comes out, if we can find some folks that can shed a light on it, we'll certainly have them on the show. But we'll be very interested to hear what folks are saying on our forum and elsewhere about it, and hope to have those conversations here in the next couple of weeks with everyone.
Hey, this is AJ Benzing.
This is Justin Bonomo.
This is Downtown Chad Brown.
Hi, this is Clooney Gallen.
This is Daniel Negreanu.
Hey, this is David Singer.
This is Linda Johnson.
Hi, this is Greg Raymer.
Hi, this is Hoyt Corkins.
Hi, this is Cindy Violet.
Hi, this is John D'Agostino.
This is Joe Seabach.
This is Jennifer Harmon.
Yeah, this is Johnny Chan.
This is Cowboy Kenna James.
Hi, this is Mark Safe.
This is Paul Wapakin.
Hi, this is Miami Johnson.
This is Noah Brunson, and you're listening to Annie Up.
All right, we're back in the Bar League game hands of the week, Chris.
All right.
Actually, technically a situation, I'm guessing.
Okay, the situation. Do I need a pad and paper? That's the... Oh, is it?
Yeah, you probably should pad and paper it up. It's right. It's quite a long email from our good friend Ivan. You know, these Bar Leagues, Wild Wild West of the poker now, right?
Sure.
But you got to start somewhere. So this is what he said. He's in a Bar League game with Squiggly 3,000 in chips. And actually, he wrote out Squiggly, too. I appreciate that. 3,000 in chips, and he's in the big blind. Blinds are $10.20 right now.
Jeez.
Yeah, start early, I guess. Okay. Be a lot of play these Bar League plays. Under the gun calls, next two player fold, everyone else calls. And he said, really, everybody, several players from the other tables, the waitresses, the busboy, and the cook have put chips in the pot even though they don't have cards. Okay, so maybe I'm exaggerating, but there are six of us in, and the pot is 120. Okay. So it's our option, and we look down at six of clubs, four of hearts, and he says, whoop-dee freaking do. Well, no one raised, so I'm stuck with this craptastic hand, and I check my option. I hate the big blind.
I would shove. I'm serious. It's a perfect hand to shove. Everyone called. They obviously don't have a good hand. Let's shove and take all this money down. Bet 3,000 to win 120. But
here's the problem in Bar Leagues is you'll get called.
You will get called by six people. But that is a good move to make later in the... In the tournament, when you notice that these people like to limp and don't have big hands, and when that does happen and you are in the big blind, that is a good bluff move to make, is to shove. But in here, let's just be happy that we have a one gapper and we don't have to put any more money in the pot to see a flop.
All right, flop comes down, six of spades, six of diamonds, jack of hearts, and he says, I'm not a fan of Ricky Tikki Tavi, and Bingo Bango Bongo has fallen out of favor, so I'll just go with Cowabunga. But I will give him credit here. We're going to give him some swag anyhow. But even if he wasn't swag worthy, I was going to send him something else for actually spelling Ricky Tikki Tavi right. First one in the history of Andy Up to spell Ricky Tikki Tavi.
Yeah, because I have no clue.
All right, so small blind checks, and it's on us.
I don't mind checking. I mean, you know, all these limpers and stuff, you probably get a caller if you bet. Somebody might have a jack, so I can go either way. I just don't know what these players are like. I mean, it's so tough to not know anything about the players. If you don't know if there's somebody aggressive behind you who likes to bet every flop, I don't know anything. So, generally, if I think these people, someone will bet, I may check. If I don't think anyone would bet, I would check. If I think someone would call a bet, I would bet. I mean, really, how can I really give advice? You know what I mean? But if I thought that someone would bet behind me, I would check to check raise so that I can get more money in the pot. If I thought no one would bet at all, I would check because I want them to catch up on the turn. I mean, not to the point where I could be harmed at all, but really, the only hand you're really against is like a suited A6 or a 7-6, you know? I don't think someone with Jack-Jack would limp, so especially in a bar league, especially with all this dead money in the pot. So really, the only hand we're behind right now is like an A6 or a 7-6. So I have no problem with letting somebody catch up a little more on the turn. But if you're telling me that someone would call a bet behind me, I would bet about 70. If you're telling me that no one would call a bet, I would check. How's that?
Excellent. All right, well, I'm going to stereotype our bar league players here a little bit, much to Martha's great enjoyment. And this is just based on the bar leagues that I've played in. Generally speaking, players are calling stations, and they'll call with a wide range of hands. All right, on this kind of board, it's not unheard of that to get calls from king-queen or something like that.
Yeah.
Where in a real game, you probably would. So that's one thing. And two, you have a lot of bluff catchers in bar leagues, I think. Oh, I gotta see it. Or, I don't think you're full of it. Give me another Bud Light. I'm having a little fun. But, I mean, that's my experience, is that people don't believe you in bar leagues. And so I think that makes it really tough to actually bluff in bar leagues. But it really works in your favor when you've got a hand like this. Because I think people are going to call you. And eventually somebody's going to raise you or something like that to really put you to a test. And that's great right now, because I think you're right. I can't imagine we're behind right now. Now, the other thing I've noticed in bar leagues, too, is now the question is, because I'm going to bet here. But I could defend a check, but I'm going to bet just knowing how bar leagues work. But what I think is really key here is players don't like to have to think about their call in bar leagues. Have you noticed this when you played? So if you get a complicated, like my favorite nine, bets that end at nine and stuff,
uh-huh,
that would just blow people's minds at bar leagues. They would be able to factor that. So I'm going to put a bet in that's a single chip here. And, you know, I don't know what the denominations are, but you put in too many chips, now you confuse people, and they're like, I was going to call, but now I got to figure out how much it is. This just sounds like I'm being real derogatory, but this is what I've seen. So, you know, if I have 100 chip, I'm probably going to put 100 chip in because someone's going to say, oh, they're not going to say it's 100. They're going to say, oh, it's one chip. Okay.
Yeah.
But you put in a 50-cent chip and a 25-cent chip, or 25 chip. Now it's 75. Now it's two chips. Now is that a black? Is that a gray? What is that? Oh, forget it. I'm just going to fold. It's really mind-boggling to me that that's how those type of players play. So I'm going to look for whatever single chip I can make. I'm going to hope it's like 100. But if it's a 50, that's fine. And I bet you I'm going to get three callers.
Hey, those are good points. I mean, I guess I haven't played bar poker in a long time. You're right. A lot of people will call because it's just bar, and if they're knocked out, it doesn't cost them anything, and they're going back to the bar and having another Bud Light. So you're probably right. Maybe with that, I'm thinking, yeah, I probably would bet out, knowing that there is.
Yeah, but that's saying, if you check here and you come alive with a really big bet later, you're probably still going to get a call.
Man. Yeah.
But I want to kind of string along as many of these people as possible. I mean, there's no real draws out there. It's rainbow flops. I'm not worried about flushes. There's not going to be a card that comes on the turn that connects with a straight. So really, at this point, I'm just worried if somebody else has a six
But at that point, there's really nothing that's going to hurt me more than at that point, right? And
right.
if somebody's playing 6-3 or 6-2, so I'm dead at that point anyhow. So, you know what? I could defend either way, but I think I'm going to start building a pot here, and it's going to allow me to bet a bigger amount later on.
All right.
So our hero says the small blind checks, since there are 749 players behind me, I want to get value for my hand. I have the deck crippled, so I check as well. To my dismay, it checks around. I hate the big blind.
Mm.
Yeah, you don't normally see it check around. Although, again, I mean, these players are kind of passive, too, so if they don't have to put anything in, you get that a lot, too, in these barter leagues. How much is it to me? No bet yet. Oh, I can check? Okay, great. I check.
Yeah.
So you have to, I guess that's the other reason you got to put something in. What do you think about his comment about having the deck crippled?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily say it's crippled because, again, there is a 5-6 and a 7-6 and an 8-6 scenario out there that's suited or even just not suited because it's barter league. So I don't necessarily say it's crippled. It's crippled when no one can use the cards that you have, or no one could have the cards you have. To me,
yeah.
That's what a crippled is. Or if you have top boat and the only thing that could beat you is like quads. And so in this case, I mean, I wouldn't say crippled. Even ace jack is a hand that would call here if you bet, or jack 10 or jack 9 or queen jack. If you had bet, someone would have called here. I'm not saying they have a jack, because if they had a jack, they probably would have bet. So, yeah, I wouldn't necessarily call it crippled. I would say you have a lot of this, but I wouldn't say you've crippled the deck.
Yeah, I mean, what's he going to say next? He's going to double through someone? Come on. all right, so we're going to the turn, which is the queen of clubs. So our board now is six of spades, six of diamonds, jack of hearts, queen of clubs, and small blind checks to us again.
Now, the funny thing here is people would probably say, oh, now we got to bet because we got to protect our hand against, 9-10, and somebody else could have a queen or a jack in the hand. Then if a queen or jack comes, then we're on the underboat and all that. But really, I think that at this point, someone's going to bet. And if we bet here, we might scare everybody off because you're in the blinds.
Yeah.
You know, you're in the blinds. And so it would look like you had the six. I think the craftier thing here to do is to check again, believe it or not. I mean, I could be wrong. If it checks around again and somebody makes a straight on the end, you're going to be mad. But really, the crafty thing here is someone in this hand limped with a jack or a queen somewhere. I mean, that's 12 cards out. One of those, other than your six and four, 10 of those cards, one of them is going to have a queen or a jack or a draw, or someone's going to think they can steal it because no one's betting. So yeah. I think craftier thing here is to check.
I totally agree with you. And here's where it's interesting. Now, I know I'm blending the world between bar leagues and real poker when I say this, but in a real poker game, when it's checked around and then the blind comes out firing on this board, almost always everybody folds and you take it down.
Because yeah.
people at this point is like, all right, he tried to get sneaky with the six. Now we bet out. All right, I'm not going to fall for that. That was important yesterday. and I actually think that actually will be the same thing that happens in a bar league here. So you're right. I was advocating getting money in on the flop because I knew people were going to call. But since we checked, I think we killed that option. So now I think we've got to check behind, have somebody else take a stab at it, and then we're going to get our money with the big bet where somebody might think that... were
representing,
yeah, rather than actually really having it. So
right.
I think that's the line we have to take now. All right. Well, our hero disagrees, and he says he can't risk another check, so he bets $100. Yes, I guess.
Well, I think we know how we feel about that. I mean, you know, it's clear that what we feel is that it's crafty not to bet here. So, betting $100, not that it's a mistake. You know, it's not a mistake. It just feel like people might fold if you bet 100, which obviously isn't going to happen here because you bet 100 in the hand of the week. So I feel like, you know, 100 is probably not the right thing to do here.
All right. Well, he said everybody folds except for the player in the cutoff, who had about the same amount of chips as our hero. And he says this cutoff player is a fairly solid player. Doesn't usually call with garbage. What the heck can he have? Ace queen is a possibility. So is a better six.
I hate the big blind.
So he called? He didn't raise?
No, he just called.
Hmm. Okay.
I don't know about the better 6 tier, though I guess it could be. I mean, at this point, now we're getting into, like, third-level thinking in a bar league, which is absolute nonsense, I think. But I think I still got to put a bet in on the river here. I'm not going to put him on a better hand right now. And if he does, then more power to him.
Yeah, I feel like, I mean, just a call could be crafty, but it could be a draw, too. You know, he could have, who knows, ace-king. Well, he wouldn't have raised ace-king. I mean, 9-10. You know, he could have 9-10. He could have a queen, and or he could have a jack, not believing you have a queen. You know, yeah. It doesn't necessarily have to be the better six with an ace or seven. Even if it's just, the only hand that really you can imagine is better than yours now is 8-6, because even 5-6 or 7-6, they're not going to play unless they river it. So those cards won't play. So, so I don't mind the call, and I'm sure I'm going to put another bet in on the river.
All right, so the pot is 320, and the river brings the ace of hearts. So our final board, six of spades, six of diamonds, jack of hearts, queen of clubs, ace of hearts. So the always famous king 10 gets there.
Yeah.
And also obviously the ace six that we were worried about. But other than that, it doesn't really change much, I don't think. So what do we do now?
Well, king 10 is scary because he was open-ended. So 9-10 or king 10. I don't know if they would have raised a king 10, but I can't not bet here. I have to bet. What was in the pot? Do you remember?
320.
Yeah, I'd bet like 150, 200.
All right. I think I'm probably going to do the same thing. And our hero says, even though the villain doesn't actually call with garbage, I want to get value for my hand, so I bet 200. Fair enough. Uh-huh. And our villain raises it another 400 on top. And he says, have I mentioned the fact that I hate the big blind?
Well, there's way too much money to not call that. I think that the pot's big enough now that you have to call that with three sixes. I wouldn't raise.
Started with 3,000, absolutely. I don't want to say a tough laydown. This is just almost a ridiculous laydown at this point. You're right, you don't want to raise at this point, but we'll call and see if we can show down a really good hand here.
Plus,
somebody that's probably trying to take away from us.
Plus, it cost us 400 on the river. What did he bet on the turn? 200, 600. So maybe 650 or 700 on this hand. Maybe 600. No, 620. So we still have, you know, 2,300 chips, and the blinds are 10-20.
Yeah.
We still have 100, or more than 100 big blinds. So it's okay to lose this 400 on the end if we're wrong, but I'm not going to raise. That's the thing. That's the key. Don't get in trouble.
Very likely could be just an ace playing against us here, too.
Yep. It could have been
an ace king could have stayed in all the way here, and now he hit his ace and says, aha, I caught you.
Yeah.
I'm not scared of this raise at all.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't put him on that good of a hand just because I think they might raise with it pre-flop, but
that's true.
Something like king 10 could be a limper, and something like 9-10 could have been a limper. So the 9-10 could have been a draw. The king 10 could have been a draw and gotten there. But even so, unless you're up against something bizarre like jack 6, because they're just that bad in this bar league, you really have to think your sixes are good here, but don't want to open up the betting again. Just be happy to take a pot down if you can.
All right, our hero says, I have been known to do my share of bluffing and value betting thin, and my opponent knows that. So he could be making this raise with just a pair of queens or as a re-steal with nothing. Of course, you could also have a six with a bigger kicker. Is uncowabunga a word?
Well, again,
I'm not so much worried here, Ivan.
Yeah, the bigger kicker six isn't going to play unless it's, you know, a king. Unless it's king six. Other than that, you don't have to worry about the playing. So, I'm just going to call.
Okay. And it says, in the end, I call saying, quote, I hope I didn't just get sucked out on. The villain smiles, says, yeah, you did. And turns over king of clubs, ten of clubs, for Broadway, uncowabunga. Says, this is why I hate the big blind. Even when you get a big blind special, they often just get you in trouble. I could have bet on the flop and you would have folded, but you have to get value for your hands when you hit them. Then on the turn, when I did bet, the villain had picked up an open-ended straight draw, so it wasn't going anywhere. I could have made the laydown on the river, but I'd take solace in the fact that many of the players in these bar leagues would have just shoved and gotten busted, or I saved some chips and lived to fight another day.
Yeah, because, and that's the other thing, is if you had taken the line that you were talking of, where you know someone's going to call you, you would have bet, and then that guy likely would have folded. Although he could have been the one who called. You know,
he could have.
You said King Queen would make a call there. King 10 might make a call too. Who knows? But generally, the King 10 folds, and then you're up against someone else who has a lone jack or a pair of eights or something. So I think the bet is probably the best way to go on that flop. But given the way you played, I think you lost a minimum. I mean, I guess you could have checked
the river. I don't fault the river bet either. I mean, I think, you know, you can't be scared of that King 10, and then you were lucky that he only raised to 400. So, yeah.
Yep.
All right, Ivan, we appreciate that. Sending us the hand of the week, and we are going to bestow upon you our latest piece of swag on the swag shelf. A classic tournament dealer button from tournamentbutton.com, which offers a variety of home dealer buttons with timers built into them. We use them in our home game.
Yep.
You can even customize them with your own photo or logo, and be sure you ask about the Ante Up logo version. And when you do go to their site, to use code ANTIUP for free shipping. And everybody else, send us your hands of the week to podcast@antiupmagazine.com, and you too might get something great like our new tournament buttons.
Well, I'd like to thank the DOJ for getting off their butts and making this deal finally happen, and giving us a show topic in a week when we weren't sure we had a show topic. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnteUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.